Okay, and
we good?
We're rolling.
Cool. All right, well, hi everybody. My name is Rob. To my left here is Jason. We are the hosts of Building the Game podcast. I don't know if you guys, how many of you are familiar with it, but we do a show. We're out of Kalamazoo, just kind of about game design. We're both aspiring game designers, trying to share everything that we learn about game design with anybody who wants to listen. And one of the best things that we ever decided to do sometimes was to shut up and let real designers talk. So we wanted to organize this panel here, this discussion today, to basically get some expertise, get some input from guys who've made it. You know, we're still kind of nobodies here. So we wanted to talk to real people who have really had their games put together and get advice from them on learn how they got started and see what advice they have for us as well as for you guys about getting started in game design. So if you guys would please introduce yourselves.
Sure. Hi, I'm Matt Riddle, one of the co-designers of Fleet from Griffin Eagle Games. I'm on BGG, is Riddlen, R-I-D-D-L-E-N. So if you ever see me on there, say hi, send me geek mail, whatever.
Hi, I'm Ben Pinchback. I'm the other half of Fleet, the less vocal one, but the one with all the good ideas.
So. Yeah.
I'm Jeremiah Lee. I'm the designer of Zombie in My Pocket and a bunch of other games that are in legal trouble. I don't know why. It just happens that way. And I don't know. I do a lot of things in games. I do game marketing as well as game design, but game design is hard work, so as you know.
Sweet. I'm Jason Katarski. I designed the Great Heartland Hall and Company for Dice Amy Games and Frog Flip for Sprocket Games. And yeah, Heartland Hall was my first game ever designed and first game published. So it's been a fun year or so with that thing being really kind of out there. So
cool. Great. And he's Jason. I'm Rob. I already said that. I want to start kind of with the beginning of game design. I'm not going to ask that terrible question, where do you guys get your ideas? Because that doesn't help anybody.
I steal them.
And then I take them from Jason.
Hence the legal trouble.
That solves it.
Because I don't think anybody is really, anybody in this room probably is not hurting for ideas. I want to ask the question, how do you know that it's a good idea, or what do you do to determine whether this idea is worth pursuing?
Oh, I'm going to start. The first thing people tell you usually is make sure you like it, make sure your friends like it. It's kind of bullcrap because your friends are going to like it because they're your friends. So I think once you know that you've done something for a while and that you think it's good enough, I think it's really important. It's hard to do, so don't let me understate this. It's hard to get actually feedback from someone that isn't going to tell you what you want to hear. So I think you have to know it's a good idea because you've played it a million times yourself. But to really see if it's something that's going to go beyond you as the designer, I think it's important to get completely, if not blind, then objective feedback, however you can manage to help make that happen.
And there are some people that are willing to give you real feedback. It is hard. It's hard to give friends feedback. But you can find some people that maybe are just a little bit outside of your circle that will really give you feedback and really say, dude, this doesn't work. And it's, admittedly, it's easier. I can do that. Like, outside, like, I can tell these guys, like, this doesn't work. When it's somebody who's really inside my circle, it's harder. I want to encourage them, especially if they haven't already had a game put out. But, like, once you're already, like, in the stage of, yeah, like, I understand, I've been through this before, then being able to say, no, the thing you just made is terrible, like, that's a little bit easier. Getting somebody who, like, this is their game, and this is the only game that they've ever worked on for the past 5 years, and they come to me, and I play it, and I'm like, that was terrible. Then I just, like, I just kind of crush them. Or they think, it's not terrible, he's terrible. He clearly doesn't understand it, or it's not the kind of game that he likes. And that's also the case. But try to, like, find somebody who's just outside your circle who can do that. And don't make them sit through 3 hours of it if it's not their thing within the first 30 minutes. So
I was just going to back up like a step and say, for Matt and I mean, we design as a duo, and that works really well for me because I'd never finish anything or have any games designed if it wasn't for working with a partner. But the thing we do like right away is we'll prototype like day one. Rather than kick an idea around for 6 months and try to get the math perfect and everything, we've probably had like, you know, 20 ideas that we've prototyped, tried, and trash canned, you know, in a night or two. So to know if it's good right away, we generally just play it. We'll mock it up with anything we have around. We'll play it for a night. We get together once a week. So generally we'll spend an hour to 3 hours. And like I said, there's probably been a dozen to two dozen games that we've played once. They're no good. Maybe we save one little thing that's good and then just, you know, move on. So for us, it's getting to prototype as quick as possible.
And I do think the other half of that is, and that doesn't work for everybody, but for Ben and I, you know, I've known Ben a long time anyway, but as you are with somebody, you know, and you do something together, you're going to get to the point where you can be honest. And he's going to hate 8 of my ideas in a row and like the 9th one. And I'm going to think he's being arrogant and not listening to me, but that's the point. Right, so it's not just is it having other feedback, but it's having somebody else to work with. In our case, you know, on the same design, to really say, is this idea worth pursuing? Is it worth our time? And then to get two points of view on that is a nice way to kind of keep things moving.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys have done anything on your own. Give you a lot of credit.
Yeah, you know, my thing is that I do that early. Well, I prototype early and see if it works, and I play by myself and see if there's a system there. And I don't really get into, like, is this fun? Because it's really hard to come up with fun ideas. So any idea that works in a systematic way, then I want to say, well, now I'm going to take it to my wife, or I'm going to take it to my small group of friends and say, like, hey, is this a game? Is this something you can enjoy? And then, you know, the process continues from there. So feedback is really important. But, I mean, you start with what you like. And, you know, I think another thing, the question, you know, you said good ideas. You know, I think stuff that is unique, that you instantly can get a vibe that, hey, there's not a ton of these other games out there that are just like this idea, or this puts this mechanic, you know, the thing that makes this game work has never been done in this kind of a setting before. So, you know, that's usually what drives me to prototype. I might come up with a game idea, and I'm like, oh, that's too much like this, so I leave it alone. But when I come up with a game idea that feels like there's not an oversaturation of in the space for games, then I might proceed to make that prototype. And then, yeah, the feedback is important to help you know that, you know, other people might enjoy it, since games is, you know, inherently like a social thing.
There's a saying in the game of Go, it's an ancient game, that you're supposed to lose your first 300 games really quickly. And I think that works in game design as well. You just, like, make your first, maybe not 300, but make your first couple of games quickly and just, like, set them aside. Say, okay, now I'm going to make a game. And that's not how it happened with Jason, with Heartland Hauling. And, like, the first game that I designed, I mean, outside of, like really trying to make something, was also a game that is still what I'm talking about today, 6 years later. But generally, first games are pretty terrible. And so put that first game away and say, hey, this is what I liked about it, but I'm going to move on. I'm going to make a game that's better than that.
Great. So you guys, it sounds like you all try to go from idea to prototype pretty quick once you feel like you have something worth pursuing. What are your prototyping toolkits, or what do you guys put together?
Pen and paper.
Yeah. Labels. Those Avery labels from like Walmart and Meijer and stuff. You know, we have piles of those, markers and a paper cutter. I went and bought a nice, awesome, fancy paper cutter. It was for my wife for scrapbooking, but it really was for me. And you can cut corners, you can cut cards, you cut labels, and that's
chipboard.
And chipboard, I will say.
Your paper cutter has revolutionized our prototype.
It has. I mean, you go to Amazon, it's like the pack of the medium weight chipboard, it's like $20 for a stack of sheets, and you just full page labels. You buy full page labels, printer, stick them on, cut around it, and you go. And it's true, it's not just. It doesn't matter how it looks. I mean, there's a little. If at the very beginning, often we're using cards and labels, and it's ugly and it's handwriting, but it's not a matter of making something look pretty right away. It's because it's to get a feel for it. And you're going to know it sucks. And if you know it sucks and it's been 2 hours, then stop. Because it sucks.
But what if it's good?
If it's good, then you keep going.
Okay.
So there it is.
Oh.
Yeah,
huh?
I've had that backwards the whole time.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Yeah. If yeah, sucks, right. Yeah. Write that down.
I use Excel to put in all my data and print out cards, and then just cut it. I have my kids sleeve things for me.
Yeah, there's this saying, and there's probably people that are good artists and good game designers and can do both concurrently, but I have no artistic ability. There's a saying on the designer forums that, like, working on your art is not working on your game. And that works for us because we're not artistic. So working on my game, to me, is just getting it on paper playable so that other people can look at it and play it. And I'm trying to work on the game mechanics and how does a turn work and what is Jeremiah going to do on a turn? You know, those are the things I'm working on. Not like, hey, how does the dragon look? Should the 2VP be in the corner or this corner? Like, that stuff is all going to be figured out by a graphic designer, hopefully at some point, someone that knows what they're doing. I'm just trying to make the actual game work. What decisions am I making on a turn is the biggest thing that gamers want to do, is make decisions on their turn. So,
yeah, I just heard a story about a guy who made this really cool deck of cards, and it had like, it was like a standard deck of cards, but then it had like two suits and a bunch of extra icons, and he's like, man, he brought it to a meetup for game designers. He's like, I made this deck of cards, and I really want to figure out something to do with it. So it was at a game design group, so they all took his deck of cards and they all made games out of the same deck of cards. So that was cool, but like, he definitely started backwards. So I start generally with stuff I have already. I've started collecting thrift shop games that have interesting bits and pieces that I'll never play. The boards are hanging on the wall, like as like wall art in my kind of family room. And the bits are just in little, you know, Plano containers, fishing tackle boxes. So I have like this physical stuff I can go to. I use standard deck of cards at the beginning a lot of the time. A lot of my games are card games that have numbers on them. Frog Flip was I used a deck of cards and similar with Heartland Holland. Before I spent any time on a computer, I just manipulated physical bits that I had been collecting in hopes that one day I would design a game. And it worked out for me. So, yeah, like generic cards. Like, I look for a game called Flinch a lot, which is just unsuited 1 through 12. And I put little stickers on the middle if I want to make my own suit. Or I use, I do sleeves with sheets of paper tucked into them once I get past that. But there's all kinds of games. So, like, I go and I look at every random card game that there is. I'm like, oh, this is just numbers and colors. Okay, I'll take that. So just anything I see that is seems like it's open and generic and I can kind of, you know, just have something in my arsenal and it costs, you know, 39 cents, and I'll throw it in my kit to help me kind of have something to work with when an idea strikes.
Oh, and the 1,000 cube bucket of plastic color cubes on Amazon. It's 10 colors of 100 each. It's awesome. They're plastic and they're like, you know, they're a centimeter cube, I think. They're counters, but it's like $20 on there. Totally worth it. Throw it on the shelf. You know, cause if you're making cube pusher zero type stuff, it's invaluable to have 10 colors to choose from, as many
or
as
you even
need.
If you're not, if you want to have a meeple eventually, it's right, still yeah, a nice substitute a meeple, during yeah. prototype.
You can imagine the little crab meeple that
yes. exactly
form.
I'm curious, guys, especially because you guys down there said that you aren't good at doing any sort of art design or anything like that for the game. Mm-hmm. So when you're looking to go to a publisher, I know, you know, they say don't do art ahead of time, but I'm curious, what does your design look like when you take it to them? I mean, is it still really ugly?
For me, it's ugly, and I mean, I know, like, I've heard you guys talking about the idea of like getting some representative art for it, but I also know, like, I do a lot of scouting for games as well, and like for me, yes, it's nice to see something pretty, but it's also, it can be scary, like, because I think, oh man, he's clearly put a lot of time and money into this art, either time or money, and like, I don't know, so often that means bad to me. I see more games that are bad that are pretty than bad games that are ugly. And I don't know, I mean, maybe it's because the time is spent doing that, but yeah, mine are still ugly. I will grab visuals from Google, like from my Kitty Corral game, which is a speed game for sorting cats. My kids had done this coloring page of this cute cat, and I was like, oh, I want that cat. So I just put that on every card and then dropped in a different color because it's just... And in the published version, it'll have lots of different cute cats, but right now it's just one cat, and it might be purple, but... yeah, so you just... I mean, I don't know. I know that the people who are practiced at finding good games don't need anything. And I won't say that I'm awesome at that, but I'm certainly a lot better than I used to be. And I know, like, Seth Jaffe, like, you sit down with him from Tasty Minstrel Games, and he doesn't need pictures to know if the game's good or not. And Travis Worthington, Indie Boards and Cards, like, you sit down with him, it doesn't matter, because he wants to see the game. So.
Yeah, I say our portals have gotten a little prettier now that Matt's Captain Arts and Crafts. but what we sent Griffin originally was three decks of bicycle cards with paper taped to them. Literally, I hadn't even found labels yet. Like, I wasn't labeling. I had, like, printed out. I did it in Excel, cut it out manually, and scotch taped paper to three decks of playing cards. And somehow, because they're professionals and they know how to play games, they played this game with no art and then saw there was a game there.
I mean, and that was for Fleet?
Yes.
For
Fleet. Because that's, you know, what they do. They liked the idea from the emails Matt had sent them about the game enough to try it regardless if there was art or not. And they were able to play that ugly prototype. And
I think it depends on your audience a little bit, too. I do find that, you know, like Ben said, I mean, jokingly, we did. They've gotten prettier, you know, as we've gotten our ideas set. You know, but art, even the fake art, as Jeremiah would say, which I think he's right, you know, Google Images and DeviantArt, all those kind of things, we're just kind of borrowing things from the internet. Even that is the absolute last thing. You know, the game is completely done. We played an ugly version for a while. The reason to make it look decent, I think, is 2 points. One is, if you're spending too much time on that, kind of like Ben mentioned, Jeremiah mentioned, you're wasting time. You're just kind of, you push it for whatever reason, you run out of good ideas, and now you're just making it pretty. But if you're going to get play testing, some of those people, they're not professionals, right? They need to see enough something, especially if it's like you're sending to some guy off BGG, for example. I think it's important then to have something that's presentable, because they can't see past paper and printouts and things. They need,
yeah,
a
what
little
you're saying
bit.
Is right. Presentable, though, like Jeremiah right. said, hey, it's a cat. Here's a picture
right,
of a cat.
Exactly.
Imagine a great picture of a cat.
Right.
This is functional enough
yeah.
for my blind group to play it.
Yeah.
So I guess
you're going to get the idea.
It's kind of either one. I mean, I think making it look good enough is probably the right answer.
You can still get my first drawings for my first game is up on BoardGameGeek. You can download it in the file section of the Zombie in My Pocket solo. So you can see my little line drawings that are mostly recognizable as what they should be. Yeah. Because it got redesigned by an awesome graphic designer, Quan Chai, who does a bunch on BoardGameGeek. And then, so I took it down. I took my prototype down. And then, like, a year later, people were like, but wait, we want to play with the original. Like, really? Like, why? So, yeah.
Right on. Okay. If anybody out there in the audience has any questions, of course, feel free to ask.
You talked about connecting to an outside network, or even when you mentioned emailing Fleet. I think for a lot of us, it's easy to get our friends to try our game.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, we don't always get hard-hitting feedback. We get a pat on the back.
We want
to do that. How can we connect to that outside network? I wonder if you had any advice about that.
So I'll restate the question so we can make sure it's recorded.
Okay.
So your question is how do you make those connections outside of your personal friend group to a bigger audience, to a publisher even?
Mm-hmm. It's not easy. I mean, that's true. You know, at some point, right, if it gets easier, obviously, after the first time, people might be interested in your stuff. I will say, to take half the question and answer it a little bit, you know, past the point of playtesting, publishers generally, and this is probably my favorite tip, if you want to call it that, publishers almost always have a process. They want you to follow it. They really do. They don't, you know, if it's, you're going to go to their website, they're going to say, send this data in this format at this time. And that's what they want you to do. They don't want you to send an email every day. They don't want you to ignore that. Just follow the process. There's a reason they have it in place. It's because they get a lot of these, and they're going to filter through it. And, you know, just, you know, kind of a...
Since that had nothing to do with the question asked, does anyone want to actually
answer the
question?
That's the publisher part.
Yeah, that's the publisher part.
I was going to say, like, the fact that you're at this con is the best first step.
Yeah.
Most of the good blind testers we have are people we met at conventions. In fact, all of them are people we met at conventions. So it's proto spiels, it's unpubs, it's origins, it's just buddies we've met, we've played, hey, Jason, how you doing? Oh, hey, you know, can I send you my prototype? Maybe you can send me yours, you know, stuff like that. Just people we've met that are enthusiasts because they're at Grand Con or they're at Origins. I'd say that's where we found most of our
Because we actually all know each other, and we've gamed at each other's houses, but we're not from the same gaming group. Like, I've played Jason's prototypes, and I played the two-player variant.
Yes,
and they
did.
Played my stuff. But we're not, like, we're professional friends.
professional friends. I get paid so much to hang out with them.
But yeah, definitely, like, being here is big, because then you're gonna meet people that can do this kind of thing. There aren't a lot of publishers here, but there are people, especially at smaller cons like this. Like I said, I don't all like rush me or anything. I do scout for a couple different game companies. And so here, like, approaching me here or approaching somebody else that looks at games, like, here versus Gen Con, I mean, you're going to have a lot less competition for time. And I'm at Gen Con, I worked like 60 hours in 4 days. I played a prototype. But like doing that, like finding the Passport guys are here, and Happy Mitten is here, and I don't know who else. But like finding them here, Academy Games is here. Find people here and say, hey, can I get a moment of your time? And even just like really elevator pitch, because we want to hear like what I want to hear before I play a game, because games can be long. They can be really long if they're not built right. I want to hear, like, give me 3 minutes of how it plays, and if that's enough, and I want to hear, like, number of players, time, and theme, and, like, the main mechanic. And I'm like, okay, I would be interested in that. Then you can go, like, 5 minutes, and then I'm like, okay, I would totally play some of that. Because, yeah, I mean, if it's going to be, like, a three-hour game, that's sometimes rough. But at places like this, like, maybe I might have time.
Right.
I don't, because I have 4 kids here. Yeah.
But I do think, though, I mean, getting back to what you said originally, though, it's kind of like you guys. I mean, because it's not easy.
Look around.
Go on BGG Design Forum, every thread's, hey, who wants to play my game? Nobody responds. Because I don't want to play your game. You know, I don't know who you are. So you almost have to look for each other, and you got to find a guy who may live in Ohio and be like, listen, you know, I'll show you mine if you show me yours. I mean, it's as simple as that. Find somebody else that isn't directly related to you, and, you know, make it equivalent. Make it so that you're both accomplishing a goal for the other person. You're not going to get random people to play it usually that no one wants to.
It's hard.
So just find, you know, look around.
This is the best first step.
Absolutely.
Conventions. You're going to meet the best people at the smaller conventions.
I mean, Porterfield was like 2 months ago, 3 months ago, right, in Ann Arbor. So if you're from here, you know, those kind of things. And that's, you walk into that, and that's all it is prototypes. So things like that.
Protospiel is great, yeah. Absolutely. Protospiel.org, is it?
I don't know the website.
Put in one of those dot things, and you'll find it. it's a great, just amazing resource. People that think about games all the time.
Right.
And, like, from people who haven't yet got anything published to people that have published a bunch. And lots of publishers there as well. And it's in Ann Arbor. It's cheap. And it's really unstructured. So,
the other thing I want to add was I've been on Twitter for a couple of years, and I just started following. My Twitter is all about my game stuff. Like, I keep my other life pretty much out of it. So I started following everybody, like a bunch of game designers, a bunch of publishers, just people who like games that you look at, who like the publishers' pages. You start interacting with those people, reading what they're responding, what they're reading to. Then occasionally, like, you know, when I have a prototype, I'll just shoot out a tweet, and I have a print and play file. Okay, I have 4 printed pages of a prototype. If anybody's interested in testing it, I'd love some feedback. And I just send it out to them, because the thing about the stage of games design and prototype stage, don't worry about people stealing your ideas, because you have that record now, because you're putting it out there. Other people have seen it. Don't worry about that. But just worry about getting that feedback that you need. And sometimes people are willing to say, this last game, I'm working on a game with Philip DeBerry, and I've done that several times with email, and I came across one of my favorite playtesters ever. His name is Mike Mullins, and he's Duke Blue Devil, and he lives for playtesting, and he gives the best feedback, and like, he's written more about my games than I've ever written about my own games. But like, really good stuff. So you come across those people, and then you start, like, you know, kind of keeping track of who those people are, come back and say, hey, you want to test this again? But yeah, like they mentioned, Protospiel Unpub is another one. The guys at Dice Hate Me are a part of that creative team now. And they're doing Unpub Minis, which is the Unpub Games Festival's in January in Delaware, right? It's over Martin Luther King Day weekend. And publishers will be there. People will be there to just specifically try people's games. So you can sign up and pay $5 or $20 to get your game in the show, or you can even, you know, like, and go set up your booth and get people to play your game. They also have people organize Unpub Minis at their own kind of local, friendly local game stores. So, and they just say, yeah, put our name on it, we'll promote it on the website, and then you get people together, you get your game shop to invite people into their store, which that's always a good thing. And you sit around and you play games and you invite people to try these games and fill out feedback forms. So Unpub is a really cool resource that's popping up. And I think there's, I don't know exact numbers, but there are like 7, 10, 12 games that have been published because publishers have come to these Unpub things and seen them and said, I want to put out that game. So Tessin was just on Kickstarter. And that came out of Unpub. Compounded and Viva Java, Dice Hate Me games that were really successful on Kickstarter. And those were both kind of discovered at the first Unpubs. So Unpub is another really cool resource and a way to get connected to other designers, because designers, you know, that's a key. If you make up games, connect with other people who make up games, whether they're published or not, and trade stuff back and forth.
So what we've learned here is to meet people and make contacts, you have to talk to people at conventions. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. To meet people, I mean, you got to talk to them. Yes, sir.
I don't know if you guys answered this yet. I got here a little late, but about when in the game design process should you figure out the winning conditions?
That's a good question. Again, I'm going to say it again for the microphones here. At what point in the process should you think about your win condition?
I think the technical answer from a Stefan Feld or some professional, you know, would probably be right away. Like, right. You know, the pros say you don't have a game until you have a way to win. You don't have a winning condition. Yeah, that's true. But a lot of times us, you know, semi-amateur designers, we just come up with an idea we love. You know, hey, this mechanic's awesome. It'd be a great game. And we end up noodling around. And then the win conditions come later and they end up shifting. I guess I'm giving us an out saying we don't always know right away.
Yeah.
But generally, it's sooner than later.
It
generally, because you need the goal of what am I trying to accomplish.
I guess it would depend a little bit on, you know, everyone's design process is, of course, different. And at some point, though, you know, more important than win condition for us usually is what you do on a turn. That's the first step, right? You can have all these great ideas and themes, but if you don't know what you're doing on a turn-to-turn basis, you don't have anything yet. So once that's sort of set in stone a little bit and you know, here's the process we're going to go through on a given turn or a given round, it's pretty soon after
that. But you need a goal pretty quick.
Pretty quick you need a goal or you don't know why
you're doing
those
things. What you're doing on a turn, why am I doing
exactly.
that?
Exactly. So the answer is pretty early, pretty soon.
I think a lot depends on the game as well. I'm thinking about the games that I've designed, and pretty much it is like the way that the game exists is because of the win condition. So it would be hard for me to think like, what if I made a game that I didn't really have a win condition yet? So for me that's weird. However, I'm then thinking about like there are games where playing with the win condition and changing. Okay, well maybe now it's like most VP or the longest string of chipmunks or whatever.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah. And that can change the way that the game plays, and even play testing that and saying, okay, so now we're gonna like build up the most iron chipmunk statues, or okay, so then we play that. How does that work? And then play, okay, tell everybody the goal is to build the longest string of chipmunks. And you play that and find out which is creating the better experience.
Yeah, at some point you know, like, okay, this game was fun until it crossed the 20-minute mark. So it should have ended 3 minutes ago.
So what can we...
Yeah.
What is the goal that can be reached there that makes it feel fulfilling?
Yep. And sometimes it's inherent in the theme. I made a game about truck driving. So what do truck drivers try to do? They try to deliver stuff so they can get paid. Right? So, like, okay, so when they get to a certain amount of money or when they run out of stuff, you know, like, then we'll find out who has the most much money, you know, has the most money. So sometimes it just presents itself, but that's a key. Like, when you're, you know, figuring out what you do in your turn, if you just like the mechanics, the way they fit together, like, figure out that sweet spot. When does it get old, or, you know, when is it, like, have you not had enough? And generally, it's better to, like, get to that place where you haven't had enough and the game ends before you're fully satisfied, because that means it's coming out on the table again and again, like Fleet. Like, you never get to do
all
the things that you want to do, and you're mad at Matt.
Yeah. One more lobster boat.
Yeah. I've always kind of joked that games that end after six rounds because they didn't have a win condition. They just like the game a lot, and you play it six times. But that's not always true, because there's a legitimate, I think, to say what Jason said, sometimes it's you're doing something that's achieving you a goal, but you want it to go to a certain length. So then just do it five times, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's a legitimate way to end a game, as long as you're having a good time through the process.
Well, I love what Jason said, because how many times have we played a game that we really liked, but then it went one or two or three too many turns, and it's clear that the position, the winner's still winning, second place is still second place, and nothing is happening over those two or one or three extra turns. And like Jason said, that's an opportunity. Hey, if we tweak this win condition, we can get rid of that 15 wasted minutes where nothing is happening and leave people wanting just a little more.
Mm-hmm. Leave people with that that highest moment that makes you go, yeah, this is cool, and then in the game. Or find a way to create that in a new, different way next round, you know. Just, but like, there is this, there is something in a game that makes you like, I don't know, that, like, that you buy in, and that's the sweet spot that you should probably build your whole game around. Anything that doesn't provide that, like, movement towards that moment that people are going to remember, it can probably be cut out of your game.
Yeah,
I don't know. That sounded smart, right?
Any other questions? Yes, sir.
Jeremiah, you're talking about how you scout for publishing companies. Do you think that for the long-term success of your game, it is better to try to go through a publishing company and get them to really pick it up, or to take the Kickstarter route and see if the crowd will come to you? Which one do you think will be better for a game in the long run?
That's a good question. So the question is, do you shoot for a publisher, or do you just do the self-publishing route on Kickstarter? Which is the better way towards success?
As a designer, I mean, outside of my role working with publishers, as a designer, I've done both. A Zombie in My Pocket was picked up by Cambridge Games Factory. Why are you laughing?
You almost forgot the name of the company.
By those guys.
Well, I was deciding how to approach this.
Those guys you all hate. Those guys.
So, it was generally a great experience. I recently kickstarted in March a game called Zombie House Blitz. It's a speed game, and it's a lot of work. And it's not out yet, and we're late, and I'm... Any of my backers are listening or in this room? I'm sorry. I had some seriously high hopes, and I put in, like, extra months. Literally, like I said, the end goal, here's what I think we can hit. I'm going to add months to that. And we're late from that, and I feel really bad. However, so, what do I say? If you can get an established publisher who has a market already, absolutely, that's your best thing. Like, especially with your first thing, like, and this is, I mean, Zombie House Blitz was not my first. I have like 1,000 followers on Facebook and like 500 people on Twitter, and I've been going to cons for 5 years, and I know lots and lots of people, and I made a zombie game, and I put it on Kickstarter, and it was really hard to hit our goal. And I'm making nothing. Like, we're paying for the game. And it's fun, and it's a great game, and I'm glad that I went through it because I learned a lot. Had I been given the choice again today, I would totally be pitching it to publishers. Getting a real established publisher to take care of your game. And established doesn't mean, like, they have to be one of the big guys. Like, if they have a game and you liked it and it's in stores, like you've seen a game of theirs in a store, then that's pretty good. You will not get... No. You'll get money. Whereas with Kickstarter, you'll get a lot of money, but it won't be yours. You won't get it. It'll be in your bank account for a while. And then you won't have it. And then you'll have a lot of work still. But I get checks that I don't have to, like, ship things out to do. Like, I get checks with money on it that I get to, like, and I don't have to do anything. It's been 6 years, and it's really great.
Can I add something to it? Yeah, I was just, like, we were talking a little about that earlier. Like, and I think the key is, what do you want to do? Do you want to make games? Or are you an entrepreneur that feels like, I want to create a brand and a company, and I want to learn everything about the game business? So if you want to make games, find somebody else publishing your game. And that's because then
you want to design games.
If you want to publish games, if you want to do Kickstarter, it's not about your game. It's about trying to make a company fly.
Yeah, it's a small
and
business.
The company is all about your tribe, right? Building your tribe, and you have to build up that credibility with people. And as a designer, if you don't have that tribe, you just find a publisher who has a sweet tribe, like Dice Hate Me. They had a podcast for years before they started, or a year or so before they started publishing games, and people trusted them and knew what they were all about. Their first game, Carnival, like within a weekend, it was funded, and then it was at the time, that was a lot of money. Like, they got to $35,000 I don't remember exactly how it ended, $20,000 or something, but it was early in the Kickstarter process, and then they did well. They delivered on their promises, and their kind of credibility has continued to rise because they've done that time and time again with good games that are on the schedule and that show up. So, but that is a totally different ballgame than making a game, designing a game. So,
to Jason's point, just to piggyback, it's what do you want to do? Like, I want to get together with Matt on Sunday nights and work on a dice mechanic, or hey, let's make a 54 card game, or I don't want to learn about how long painted wood has to cure before it goes on a container that I have to figure out how to procure to put my pallets of games on, to ship it, to get it past customs and do the right forms so I don't have a month delay, and then worry about warehousing and all these things. And I already have a job I don't like that pays my bills. I don't need another job that doesn't pay money.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, I just want to make games. That's what I love to do. I love to make games. I love making bad games and throwing them away. I like making good ones that we keep working on. That's just what I'm passionate about.
I mean, just what everybody said. It's a very simple answer. You want to do all the work, publish your own game. And by the way, it still may fail miserably, right? Yeah. So at least if you've gotten to the point where you get it to a publisher and they enjoy it and they like it, even if it doesn't do as well, you didn't really invest anything. So just from a life perspective, right? I mean, we've, like Ben said, we both have perfectly fine jobs that pay us every couple of weeks, and we have a good life. Am I going to risk some of that just because then you might make a little bit more on the back end? Or are you going to just... I mean, the publisher takes the risk for you. That's why they're there. They want to invest in your game because they think it's worth their time and their effort. And then that's why the checks are smaller at the end, but it's safer enough.
But not to discourage, if you are the entrepreneur spirit and that's you love that, you want to get into the fulfillment, the shipping, and the printing, and you want to call China and find someone over there to double check the factory didn't mess up for you and stuff.
We've all got games that we want to show you.
You want to spend your money on us.
I got a dice game I want to show you after the.
There is also a great printer in Battle Creek that I used.
They do all the Flux games as well. So like
EPI Delano Services. Yeah. That's where. And they're
Michigan.
I mean, it's you're paying more. You're paying more for having it in Michigan. But you know what? When it's done, like, I get to drive over and get it.
It's not on a boat.
What's the name of it?
EPI/Delano Services, and tell them Jeremiah sent you. I don't know if I get anything, but
they'll appreciate it.
We should do that. I got an idea for a trucking game that uses cubes and cards.
That's
and I think
a good idea.
We could really do it well.
I think we got time for one more question here.
I'm just formulating it in my head right now. When you're doing the design process of the game, what's the one thing other than game just flat out sucking? What's the one thing that turns you off and says, I'm done with this, I'm going to move on to something else?
What's the one thing that kills a new idea for you? Okay.
I know for me, it's complexity. Complexity that doesn't come from the people. But that's my preference of the games that I want to play. I want to play games that are simple where the complexity is from the people. If I start having to deal with a lot of stuff in my design, I'm like, I will never finish this game. I just know it might be a great game. I will not finish it, and so I set it aside because I make simple games that allow people to interact. That's what does it for me.
I think it's a little bit too, if you think it needs something else, that's probably okay. If you add that and you think it needs something else, and then three things later, now you've gotten a game that you thought you liked, and you've added four things to it because you thought it needed more, probably it wasn't that good to begin with, potentially. So, you know, we're jokingly call it kinesiing it, because all these games are one thing, right? They're awesome, too. I mean, we'll never make a game as amazing as some of his are, but at some point you've added a bunch of things because you thought you weren't quite there. Maybe it's because the core idea wasn't actually something that was worthy of your time. So if you strip it back down to that core idea and it's not a good game to you anymore, you're not enjoying it, you're not liking it, then maybe it's just time to move on.
I was just thinking about fun.
Yeah.
Like, if I still like to play it, and if the people I play it with still like to play it, then I'll keep going on it, you know?
Yeah.
If it's not fun, I'm going to stop.
Right. Yeah. Even if it's something that might be good, but it's not your style of game. Like, if it's not fun, I'm not gonna play it.
Yeah, I just designed a game the other day, like, super quick, and it's going to be huge, guys. Watch out. And it's got a memory element. I'm terrible at memory, and my wife, it has a little bit of social, it has a little bit of deduction in it. My wife hates deduction, so I can't test it with my first playtester. And so I get together with some guys, and I'm like, I don't know if this is even a game yet, because I haven't been able to play it, so let's play it. And we start playing it, and those two dudes that I'm with were having a blast. They were having like these like fist raise in the air moments, and I was like, sweet, I designed a game I hate, but it's going to be so crazy. No, but I see it, that the value, but it's not my kind of game, and I'm not very good at it. But so if I, and for me, games are all about connecting people in real life situations. I don't play video games because I like people too much. I like to sit across the table and have conversations with people. So that thing for me is like, can this game bring people together to do something that stretches us and gives us an experience that we're going to remember? So that's what I look for in a game.
Okay, final thoughts. Your one best piece of advice for a first-time game designer.
I'm going to go back to something I said before. Just, mine's more from when you get through the game design, you want to start talking to the publishers, do what they ask you to do. Just follow the steps. Don't try to go around it. Follow the process.
I'm going to say just get going quickly. I think I said it earlier. You have a great idea. You have some things on paper. We're not like mathematical geniuses. You know, we use Excel and the RAND function, and we do some things there with probability. But generally, we just make the game and play it a bajillion times, and we figure it out. If it's fun, we keep going, and we just play. We play, play, play. We play way more than we talk about it. You know, we'll play for 2 hours. Then we have the whole next week to make tweaks on the cards, to, you know, chat or whatever, and then we just play it some more. We're brute force. I guess that's our secret, is we're just brute force. We love to play games, and that's how we go.
Play the game, play the game.
When you came in, I thought... Yeah. Brute force.
Yeah.
Oh, and real quick on your other question, if you break your own game, someone else will too. So if you break your own game, it's broke. Because if you found it, someone out there in the world will find it. Yeah. Don't think I figured out because I'm a designer. No. Right. If you broke it, they'll break it too.
I see that more often than not on PvP. Yes. Someone's like, well...
No, that's the biggest thing, man. If you broke it yourself, someone else will figure it out.
If you have any inkling of a concern... Right. Address it, because someone will find it,
yep.
And then it'll be everywhere, and then you'll feel bad.
Yeah, and that's broken.
Not that we did that, but you know,
right? If we ever did, if we did, we'll tell you. We promise.
I would say find the fun and focus on whatever it is that is making your game fun. Like, what is that experience that is making you go, oh man, I want to play that again, or making you jump up and down during the game, which is like. You know, like, I do that in games. I know, like, some of you Euro people don't like jumping up and down. I do. I love it. Like, Catacombs. I made that flick, and it bounced off the barbarian, and it was awesome. And I jumped, and I'm like, okay, so the thing that's fun in this is, like, exciting things happening on the board. And so, like, find whatever is the fun, and then take off the things that aren't. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm thinking about, like, enjoying the whole process, because this is a pretty unique thing that a lot of people don't care about, that a lot of people don't know about, like, hobby tabletop games. Like, what's that? You guys play Monopoly?
All day.
Yeah. So any headway that you make, like, if you make a game, like, love that. Love that you, like, contributed to this hobby that you're a part of. And if you get it published, like, because it's not going to pay a lot of money, you're not going to get rich, you're still going to keep your job, probably. Enjoy that, like, wow, I just got paid for something I created, you know? And then when people are testing your game and they give you negative feedback, like, think of that as a gift, because somebody took the time to, like, play your game that you created and are honest about it. So everything, every part of the process can be something that you enjoy, because you're doing this really unique thing that I think is pretty special.
It is.
So, yeah, just enjoy it, because if it's not fun, then I don't know. Don't do this. Yeah.
There was a
don't
quote,
ruin my games, you know?
There was a quote I saw the other day, enjoy your wins, learn from your losses.
Mm-hmm. That's what I meant to say. That was my quote.
A little more concise.
Pretty allergy attack.
It's like anything, right? You're doing this for fun, and if you happen to make dozens of dollars later on, then you made dozens of dollars, and there you go. Great.
Twelve dozen.
Yeah. Well, thanks, guys, for hanging out. We really appreciate it. We got to clear out of the room. Thank you, everybody, for coming and hanging out. We recorded this, so our website is buildingthegamepodcast.com, or you can find us on iTunes if you want to listen back to this episode. We'll probably get it up next week, I think. So watch out for that. Thanks for coming. Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.